as doctors, you just got to learn how to play the cards that you have in a very ethical, legal, compliant way. And this is one of the ways that you do that. You know a little bit about healthcare, you know a little bit about your healthcare system. So why not use that to your advantage in your investments?
Welcome to Surgeon Syndicate. If you're paying attention, you know that you only make money when you work. It might be great money, but it's dependent on you. The information on this podcast will help you solve that. We interview experts and provide analysis into financial freedom through commercial real estate. Why? To help physicians like you thrive. Let's dive in.
Welcome back to Surgeon Syndicate. This is the second half of our interview with Vasu Karkalapudi. Welcome back, Vasu.
Yeah, nice to be here, Mike.
So when we wrapped up the last episode, we were talking about the advantage that doctors and surgeons have, especially when it comes to dealing with banks. I'd like to delve into that a little bit more. And it was an interesting thought. When my first rental property I bought was a fourplex, I was trying to decide, I'm like, do I want to do bigger things and invest in bigger things, or do I want to have my own smaller things? And so I said, well, I'm going to go down this road first. And part of it was, if I operate, because I really didn't want to be a landlord, but I thought, when I'm looking at other landlords and trying to figure out, do these people manage their properties well? What are they doing? Having some boots on the ground experience, I thought would help me, and it has. But going back to the lenders, the other part is, when we were looking to buy this building, where maybe with another prospective person, the bank might have looked a little closer at the deal, like, how's this going to flow? What's your property manager experience? They basically looked at the price of the building and my income, and they didn't care. And that, I think, is what you were saying, is it builds in a little ease right there. If you're borrowing money to do a smaller deal, that they're like, you can buy this as if it were a second home. You have the income to pay this note. So we're not going to worry so much about your experience managing it. And then if you wanted to scale, now you're going to have experience. Mm-hmm. So that was an interesting, I totally forgot about that as part of the lending process. That I remember, we bought it during COVID, and it was kind of a funny building that it was like three townhouses and a house. And none of the appraisers, there was like one building within 50 miles they felt was comparable. And it was kind of in a totally different market, like 20 miles away. And the appraisers didn't want to appraise it. They just wanted nothing to do with it. And we spent 4 months trying to get an appraisal. And I remember the head lending officer, he's like, if this was pre-2009, when they had different rules, he goes, we would just approve it. Mm-hmm. But now, to our rules, we can't do a loan without an appraisal. And so we battled for months to try to get an appraiser to appraise it. But they were like, basically, we'll approve this loan based upon your income. Mm-hmm. So that's one advantage. But you were talking more also about if it's a medical facility and it's owner-occupied. Talk a little bit more about that. How does that affect lenders when you're looking at an owner-occupied facility?
Well, so you look at any kind of real estate deal, and the largest stakeholder most of the times in a real estate deal is the lender. So lenders, because their business is to lend, they are really good at mitigating risk. And so they have a series of things that they look at in terms of trying to mitigate risk. And one of them is the strength of the borrower. So a lot of times, just the strength of the borrower, we talked about barrier to entry earlier, that can be a double-edged sword, right? Because sometimes you can get yourself into a property because you're so creditworthy and you have a high income, and forget about the metrics of the property. And sometimes the lenders are going to be like, well, that's on the borrower, not on me, because I know I can go after the borrower if something bad happens. So just as a word of precaution, being a very risk-averse guy, one of the things I hate more than anything else is anybody losing money. I've been like that way since I was a kid. I just hate the concept of losing money, whether it's mine or anybody else's. So I've always had that protective kind of instincts about that. And so just because a lender is going to lend to you, don't be lulled into a false sense of security that the property is good. They may just be making that judgment because you're a creditworthy person. They know they can come after you if something happens with the property. But to answer your question, when you are renting to yourself through another entity, I always suggest that you separate the real estate entity from the operating entity from an asset protection perspective. You don't want to have both those entities be under the same LLC. But when related parties, or parties where there's some congruency between the business that is being conducted there and the holder of that real estate, you've essentially mitigated another risk factor, right? Because one of the things you think about as a landlord is, what is the quality of my tenant? And if you or your related entity is the tenant, you've mitigated a significant amount of risk. And so when the lenders recognize that too. So that's why it's usually cheaper. For a simple example is like your home mortgage, right? So your lender will give you usually better terms on your primary home, right? Because you are living there, than they will on a rental home or a commercial property. So following that analogy, if you are your own tenant or a related party or the own tenant, that decreases the risk, which means that you'll hopefully get better terms on your loan because the lender perceives lower risk.
And in today's market, that may even be what interests them. Because I first met Vasu, we were connected by a mutual acquaintance because we were looking to build a surgery center, and we'd only spoken to a couple banks that we'd worked with. And for everything else I'd done in real estate, they really loved it, but they really didn't want to do a surgery center. And it had to do with one specific deal this bank had done within 2 years, and it totally soured them on it. And they decided that this was something they didn't like to do. And Vasu is the one who said, listen, somebody else out there wants to do your deal. And we thought out of the two banks we usually worked with, that just was like everybody. And when we went out and looked around, found out the banks are kind of like people. Some people like chocolate and some people like fruit. And some banks like owner-occupied medical facilities and some banks like strip malls and some people like hotels. Yeah. And we just had to find the bank. And then all of a sudden we found three banks that were fighting over the deal because they could see no better place for their money than a medical practice occupying their own building.
Yeah, we've replicated that model so many times and helped a lot of colleagues. I'll give you an example. There was a time period where physicians could open up their own hospital and have a physician-owned surgical hospital. And so we were fortunate enough to be able to get all of our ducks in a row. It took an act of Congress and kind of herding a lot of cats together, but we were able to do that and build a surgical hospital in Southern Indiana back in 2008 is when we built this hospital. And so what we did at that point was to have a separate entity for all the local surgeons, so to own in the real estate as well. So it's been a huge income source. It was a great place to place capital. To this day, it's probably one of my best investments. We literally just sold this last year, and 23 surgeons essentially got a 30x return on their money in 14 years. And that's the power of compounding and the power of credit terms. We were able to secure really good financing because the lender loved the fact that it was guaranteed by 23 surgeons in the community. And they were going to be the ones who were going to be operating that facility. And so it just goes to show that this is a really viable pathway that I would encourage all of your listeners to kind of be creative about thinking about how can they get a piece of the facility in which they're conducting clinic or performing surgery in.
Yeah, before we go into having a piece, I think for some of the employed doctors, I was just thinking about this too, something we've seen lately, and this has really been a change over the last year since interest rates went up and things totally changed and banks are a little less eager than they were a year ago. Mm-hmm. But the amount of money that sits in a practice's bank account, because we tend to have higher balances, and that's just the cash flow through.
Right.
Those deposits, especially right now, are extraordinarily valuable to a bank because the way the lending model works, if you have $1,000 in the bank, they can lend $10,000. Mm-hmm. And it was really something that they got really aggressive with what they were offering to get your deposits. They really wanted the deposits. And the loan was like their tool to entice you to bring your deposits. That was a new learning point for me of what a powerful thing that is, the money that flows through the practice.
Yeah, we've done that strategy as well. We have 14 docs in our group. And when we started building our medical offices, there was a lot of resistance because all my partners were like, what do we know about running real estate? It's like, trust me, guys, this is something we should do. And so we were able to do exactly that same philosophy of securing our practice collateral, our banking relationships and bank balances served as collateral for our real estate entity, even though it was in a separate entity. And so that allowed us to get really, really favorable lending terms, which we were able to use and replicate in building four different offices. So once you get that first one done, you can use that to replicate that and scale that across all the facilities that you kind of work at. So absolutely, one of the key things that allowed us to do that was pledging our practice banking and checking balance to be able to secure favorable terms on the real estate lending piece.
Yeah, I think we never had the exposure to, maybe that's something they teach in business school, that you don't realize that your money sitting in the bank is something that they want those deposits, especially when higher balances are in the account on a regular basis.
Yeah, they never taught us this thing in medical school or residency, but it's so important that even if you don't have a real fascination for economics and finance, you have an income stream and you got to be able to use that income stream to create rewards for yourself. And so a little bit of knowledge, you don't have to dive deep into it, but you got to have some cursory knowledge if you want to get ahead in the game of money.
And that's true with your personal deposits too. If you don't own your practice and you're employed, and your personal deposits also mean something to the bank. And doctors do tend to have more money in the bank than somebody who's working an entry-level job.
Yeah.
I just had a thought while you were talking, because I know a lot of the listeners and a lot of the people I talk to, and it's just kind of the way healthcare has gone, are employed docs. So they don't own their practice. So this owner-occupied doesn't fit. But I was just thinking, you know, it wasn't until really the last couple of years when I was looking at some different commercial spaces that I hadn't considered before that I start seeing a lot of the hospitals don't own their property. I had no idea. Even, I think it's the biggest hospital chain system in Wisconsin and into Illinois, the Aurora system, I figured they just owned everything until I started looking into other asset classes, started seeing their surgery centers and their offices all the time being bought and sold. I don't know if maybe when we look at things that doctors are comfortable with, and that's what I've seen with some docs, it's like this whole new world that they really have a hard time wrapping their head around. And what I've been doing a lot of is more looking at retail and industrial stuff. And it's a lot of docs, they just look at me sideways. They're like, no, 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 no. But if you were looking at owning buildings that you'd lease to the hospital, especially if you know your hospital is solvent, you got some insight into how well they're doing, because you have to have those meetings all the time where you hear about it. Do you know any docs who are employed and own medical facilities that are leased to either their employer or other hospitals in town?
Yeah, absolutely. We've talked to several of those folks across the country, and they kind of come to us for some advice. And the biggest advice I would say is that, listen, think about using that to negotiate on your contract. So the hospitals need you. There's a huge physician shortage. But even if you're going to be employed, you could bring some real estate investment options into your employment agreement negotiations. So it's a matter of being creative that way. But even if you don't do that, you also have an opportunity. You can play some insider baseball because you kind of know the inner workings of your hospital system and you kind of know which clinics are busy, which locations are growing. You can study kind of where people are going, where the city is moving in your local area and where the population is going and where the medical community might be headed. And so you can make some targeted bets and then try to find assets that you know are likely to do well in the future based upon your knowledge of the medical community and your knowledge of the hospital system that you're with. So you've got a little bit of insider baseball that an average big conglomerate from out of town is not going to have that same kind of deep knowledge of that local base.
That's interesting because you hear it in clinic. Mm-hmm. People who are coming from somewhere that they're traveling a little further. When you guys, why don't you have an office over here? There should be more over there. Wow, this is this great new part of town. Mm-hmm. And you don't hear that. It was funny as you were talking about playing insider baseball. I was thinking, I'm like, oh, insider, because we hear all these things about insider stock trading. But the reality is these are not a stock. There's not insider rules.
Right. I think insider baseball, now that if I had to say that again, I'm probably wrong connotation with insider baseball, but more along the lines of competitive advantages. I always kind of think of life as like, you've got a set of cards that you've been dealt, right? And you can't ask for a new set of cards, but you can play the crap out of the cards that you have. And so as doctors, you just got to learn how to play the cards that you have in a very ethical, legal, compliant way. And this is one of the ways that you do that is you know a little bit about healthcare, you know a little bit about your healthcare system. And so why not use that to your advantage in your investments?
Yeah. So it might be considered if you were, I don't even know what if you were buying and selling stock of a publicly traded hospital because you knew things from the inside, that might be illegal. Mm-hmm. But from a real estate standpoint, I don't know, it's interesting. You were talking about you have that leverage and you know if a group of docs were investing together and they all worked at the hospital and they said, hey, we know this area is going to need a new clinic and we want to be on the front end there. I've never had that conversation. That'd be an interesting thing to then, it's a pretty good development deal if you know the hospital's already going to lease it. Right. And they've already got all the connections and it may be you're just providing a little capital and backing for the capital to get the building built. Yeah. And it was never out on the free market for somebody else to invest in. And I think I would think as a hospital, hospitals do crazy things sometimes, but if that was a way they could keep their docs happy,
yeah,
that they're not asking for a raise, you're just asking for a leg up on the investment in their facilities.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, you just got to be careful that it wouldn't be considered inducement, and which
okay. The
hospital in serious underwater there. But basically, the way that you get around that in broad terms, again, I am not an attorney, but I've been in business and doing surgery for 20 years. So the biggest way you can protect yourself from that is to just get a assessment of fair market value of that rent. And so you, as the landlord, cannot receive rent for your facility that is beyond fair market value. And so if you ever get questioned, you can say, hey, we did an assessment, a broker's assessment of value, and we said this was the prevailing rental rates for a similar type property. And so all we're doing is charging the exact same fair market value. So if the hospital system was going to pay more than fair market value as a form of indirect compensation for you providing services in that facility, that would be highly illegal. And you don't want to end up in orange. So I would caution you to kind of stay away from that. But as long as it's fair market value, there's no issue with that.
So to our knowledge as non-lawyers, that fair market value, but you just have the inside track to being the investor versus some out-of-state entity, that should be free game. And of course, that's what lawyers are for. You find a lawyer who does these things and say, is there any issue with this?
Yeah, I mean, this is done very commonly. You ask your nephrology colleagues how they make a lot of their money, and it's through relationships with dialysis centers. And they're oftentimes offered the real estate and the operating entity. And so there are clearly defined ways to keep yourself in legally sound with a good healthcare attorney. Again, I'm not an attorney. I can just share with you as a business person some of the strategies that you can go check with your local attorneys to make sure you're compliant and not breaking any laws.
But these are great ideas that I think of all the docs I've talked to on the show who are in real estate. This is really the first time we've dug into using being a doctor as kind of an inside track or a leg up, your competitive advantage to investing in medical real estate. That's pretty cool. I hadn't really thought of it from some of those perspectives of outside of, because as a surgeon owning a surgery center or as a nephrologist, the dialysis center, but I've heard some primary docs go, yeah, well, we don't get that chance. But actually they could. They could own the office building that the hospital they're employed by leases from them.
Yeah. A bunch of the surgeons in our community, we've been able to kind of help a lot of surgeons in our community do exactly those same things. So it can definitely be done.
It's not a whole lot different than what goes on. I recently met a guy and he's been doing real estate development for a long time, but now he's, I don't know, he's like 60 and all he does is Scooter's Coffee. It's a newer coffee chain. I think it started in the Midwest somewhere. And they just, I don't know, there's like five of them in Green Bay now that were all built in the last year. And they've been really expanding. But really all he does is he knows their criteria of where they want buildings.
Mm-hmm.
He locates the property. He buys the property. Mm-hmm. They sign a triple net lease. They've got a nationwide construction company that does the construction. They've already got all the agreements. The lease is built into the construction cost. And so the whole system is there. The tenant's built in. The whole thing, he's got the whole thing rigged. And he just does like Placer AI data and looks at maps and goes, ah, that's a good one, and buys the property, and the rest is done. And I'm like, wow, man, that's a great deal. But he's kind of got this system and the relationship, and a doc could use the relationship with the hospital in a similar way. It's not quite as simple, but that's a pretty cool way of looking at it. So thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. Glad to help.
All right. So I always love this question of what is your superpower?
Yeah, that's a great question, Mike. I think my superpower is really studying success patterns and figuring out how to apply those success patterns to whatever it is that we want to do for our community. And so that's really kind of how we stumbled upon real estate is, okay, we looked at the happy people who were successful and they had passive income. Well, what's the safest way to develop passive income in a very consistent manner and with multiple ways of making money with the highest predictability of outcome? And it became real estate. So once we got into real estate, we thought, okay, well, how do we really be successful in that real estate? Well, success leaves clues. And we kind of worked with people who have done this before and partnered with them, learned from them, and then just rinsed and repeated. So I kind of love to try to do that in all aspects of life. Like, okay, how to achieve the best financial returns, how to achieve the best medical practice, how to achieve the best health, how to have the best relationships, you name it, whatever aspect of life you're trying to optimize, there's somebody who's done that before. And you can learn a lot about studying those kinds of patterns. And everybody's different. But if you study enough mentors, you can take a little bit from this mentor, a little bit from that mentor, and then customize it to your specific needs and figure out how to utilize some of those strategies under your umbrella. So I think that's one of the things that I consider one of my superpowers.
That's great. I think often as a doc, I started feeling like you're supposed to be an expert at a lot of things because people are like, oh, you're so smart, you're a doctor. And so it's hard to be new to something and be dumb. I love the success leaves clues, and you do it like somebody who's done it well before, and you're not going to be just like them. But if you go learn to play football like Tom Brady and you can emulate even some small percentage of that, you're probably going to be better than you were if you had never followed him. That's a great one. What else do you do to add value to the world?
That's a great question as well. We're on a mission to really empower our community to learn about how to really practice their craft for the passion that drove them into this. And we've found that real estate is a real powerful tool as part of that overall strategy. So we really try to provide value by providing educational opportunities and investment opportunities for our community to kind of walk hand in hand in stuff that we do. So the way we kind of started was we were trying to solve a problem for our family. And once we saw that problem for our family, it was a matter of solving that problem for the people closest to us, our partners in our practice, our family and our friends. And as we solved that problem for a lot of our family and friends and colleagues, we're really trying to provide value to our greater peer community of surgeons out there to discover the opportunities that we're investing in ourselves and try to give them the same kind of freedom that we've been fortunate enough to achieve. And then from a philanthropic perspective, our biggest passion there and to give value back is to give underprivileged kids across the country and across the world, rather, an opportunity at a fair shake at basic things like food and shelter and education to try to harness their potential at that young age when they can hopefully be contributors to this big blue planet.
That's awesome. I want to come back to the thing with the kids, but I just wanted to ask, when you were talking about your peer surgeons and the surgeons who are your investors, have you noticed a difference between the ones who are investing with you and seeing their money grow better and the ones who aren't when it comes to like, oh, we learned about next year's Medicare rates. And so he's like one of those, like you just got hit with a club, that it doesn't have the same impact when people are feeling like they've got investments that are laying the table for their future life and things are going to be okay.
Yeah, totally changes your state, right? Because if you're in a positive state, you view the world and you view opportunities and you see what you're looking for, right? And so if you see this sea of negativity about Medicare cutting its rates, and you're going to view every other opportunity that comes to you in that same negative light. And so your brain kind of focuses on what you're thinking about. So yeah, I think you're 100% spot on there.
Wow, that's a great perspective. Tell me some more about the things you're doing that involve giving kids opportunity. I just want to give you a chance to tell the world about those things and what opportunities are out there.
Yeah, there's so much out there. So I was born in India. A lot of my family is in India. So we do a lot of our international work in India. And then locally here, there are several charities that kind of help support crippled children in America in the Louisville area as well. Called one of the entities that we really love to support is called Home of the Innocents, which is a school here in Louisville that kind of helps handicapped kids get basic services. And then in India, fortunately, my dad has kind of spent a lot of time in retirement giving kind of career advice to teenagers at this school in a city called Hyderabad, which is kind of right in the center of the country. But they have another arm that kind of really takes underprivileged kids and provides them basic education in English and math and science. And so we have been able to help support some new facilities and teachers and infrastructure and various projects at that school. And we kind of also, those are the ones that we're directly hands-on, but I have a lot of colleagues in our investor community that have different passions. I've got another friend of mine, one of our fellow investors who really has been dug deep and found medical facilities in underprivileged countries that he goes and kind of really vets and so forth. So we've contributed to that as well. So those are some of the ways that we get back. We're all, you know, your entire audience, I'm sure, is filled with a bunch of very, very fortunate people. And when you give back like that, you get back a lot more than what you give. And so it's just been really rewarding. And real estate's allowed us to be able to really give back in those kind of ways.
It's awesome how often the investor community becomes more than just like going and buying a stock. I've seen that before where you get a group and there's investors and they have investor events. The investors do other things together, which may become philanthropic.
I've just been so fortunate to have such a great investor community around us that has challenged us, and we grow together and find philanthropic opportunities where you know that your money is going to be utilized in the most efficient way and going to the right people at the right time. So it's been really other side effect of our investor community that wasn't initially planned, but it's turned out to be that way.
That's pretty cool. Well, Vasu, this has been so much fun. Thank you for being here. Is there anything else you'd like to add before we wrap up?
No, I think you've done a great job. So congratulations on building a nice community. I think it's so nice to talk to a fellow peer who's kind of thinking outside the box. And I think we need to continue to spread the word to our peers that life in the operating room is fantastic, but life in the operating room is much more enjoyable when you don't really need to be there. And so a little bit of hard work and diligence and letting your money work for you will allow you to get to that point. And it's really quite rewarding. So congratulations on all your success and look forward to sharing the conversations moving forward.
Awesome. Thank you. If somebody wanted to reach out with you and get a hold of you, what's the best way to get in touch?
Yeah. So our entity is called APTA Investment Group, APTA Investment Group. There's a lot of good resources in there about our community and the kind of things that we're working on. I'm actually working on a book called The Surgical Investor. Hopefully will be out sometime next year. But yeah, feel free to log on our website. We're planning on sending the book out to all of our investor community as well. So you can register for our educational material on our website.
Awesome. And we'll put that in your LinkedIn in the show notes. So thank you for being here. For everybody who joined us, thank you so much for joining us here today. And again, we'd love for your comments and your 5-star evaluation wherever you listen into the podcast. That does help share the message. And join us again for our next episode of Surgeon Syndicate.
This has been an episode of Surgeon Syndicate. If you found value in this episode, know other surgeons are hungry to become job optional. You can help them by sharing this content today. I also want to serve you better, so I want to offer you 2 things. Number 1, I'll be able to give you the content in an even better way if you can take a moment and leave an honest review of the show explaining what you like and what you don't. And number 2, if you are a surgeon and serious about this, you don't want to do this on your own because you don't want to make mistakes with your money. I'd be happy to help. Schedule a call. We can make a plan. Looking forward to having you with me on the next episode.